Hey everybody, welcome to Regardless, You've Got This. I'm your host, Skylar Sorkin. Say hello to the syllabus for your 20-something soul. The syllabus you never received in college is finally making an appearance. This podcast will inspire you to create your very own 20-something syllabus, ultimately guiding you towards your soul purpose, regardless of self-doubt and what others think. Alrighty. Let's just get to work.
Hi, you guys. Oh my goodness. I am super, super stoked for this episode. Sandy is an amazing human being. She's become one of my really close, just older friends. I think it's so important to create relationships with older women. Number one, because of their experience, wisdom, and guidance that they can share with you. Really, if you're willing to be vulnerable and open up and ask for support when you need it, I think having those older friends, 5 years older, 3 years older, to even 20 years older, 30 years older than you, is pretty special. And I'm super excited to have Sandy on the podcast. We met at the Bay Club, a gym, and something about her just caught my eye and my energy, and I just remember meeting her. And I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I meet someone and something about their aura, their energy just calls me in to be 100% vulnerable and authentic with what I'm feeling, how I'm feeling, and sometimes it causes me to just get really emotional. Whatever it is that I'm going through, that person or a person can sometimes pull that out of you. And Sandy is one of these people. I remember meeting her and we just started talking, and all of a sudden I started just crying to her. And I was going through a really hard time, and she just gave me this like therapist vibe, a similar energy that I received from a dear, dear mentor of mine in Santa Barbara when I was going through the midst of my eating disorder. So I just had just a nostalgic feeling hugging her, and it reminded me of some of my past experiences of my younger self when she was suffering. Anyways, Sandy has just become a woman in my life who I so look up to and feel safe and supported by. She happens to be an energy healer, and she was open to me coming into her office, and she gifted me with about 4 sessions of energy healing. This was very, very cool. I went when I was navigating through some difficult situations in the workplace, and she was just really able to connect with my higher power, my angels, the universe, whatever you want to call it, and clear things out of my system, my energetic system, I guess you would say. Truly powerful work. I would recommend energy healing for anyone who was ready to do the inner work, because it's not just you walk into an energy session and then you're healed and then you can go along your life continuing the unhealthy habits or unhealthy mindsets. So you for sure have to be willing to put in the work, just like therapy. But I so recommend energy healing for someone who is just feeling maybe burnt out, exhausted. Maybe there's some trauma you want to be cleared alongside therapy. It's extremely powerful. And just, oh my goodness, kind of being real with myself and getting that accountability from Sandy throughout the energy healing sessions, and also moving into the medical intuitive readings that she does. It's been extremely interesting for me, and checking in with certain body parts that are holding stress or an anxiety or past experiences that are still in my energetic force, I guess you could say. That is my experience with Sandy, and I am very excited for her to come on Regardless. She's been a huge resource for me in my journey of defining what pristine self-care, what nourishment, what mindfulness means to me. And this has been an up and down journey. In college, many of you who went to UC Santa Barbara with me probably knew because it was pretty apparent that I was severely underweight. But I unfortunately, no, fortunately, actually, experienced an eating disorder. And the reason why I switched the unfortunate to the fortunate is because it's really shaped who I am. Not that the eating disorder is how I define myself, but it's been a lesson and a spiritual assignment for me to work through self-esteem, work through confidence, work through adversity, work through my obsessive side, through wanting to control things. And as 20-something-year-olds and beyond, there's so much freaking pressure that we're constantly exposed to on social media. There's like 20 million platforms out there. Going to the gas station, walking to Alfred, going to Cafe Lux, going to wellness events, hearing about it all the time. That is just constant noise and distractions, or spiritual assignments, what I like to call, to like trigger us in a way where we could feel not good enough. We could feel not pretty enough. We could feel not thin enough. We could feel overweight, whatever it may be, because we're comparing ourselves to strangers, to assumptions, to the media. And there's so much more than that. And there's so much more to this concept of wellness, to this concept of nourishment and self-care, nourishment, eating, mindfulness is going to look so different for each of us. And so that is why I want Sandy here today with me to really dive deep into what is pristine self-care and how can we make our own self-care nourishment kit that works for us. And what I mean by us, I mean our freaking own personal journey. Just because two girls both had an eating disorder and they both had anorexia, or they both had bulimia, or they both were over-exercising, does not mean they had the same experience. And that means self-care, nourishment, eating, the different foods they're eating, or how they're moving their body, or how they feel good again, or how they feel recharged, that is going to look completely different. And I know on social media, we see what I eat in a day. There's so many coaches, life coaches, eating coaches, health, all the things people want to talk and they want to be heard and they want to help. And that's awesome. I love it. It's juicy. It's amazing. Thank God we have all of these resources. But also, as a consumer, as a customer, as a part of the creator economy, we all are, we need to be very, very careful about what we subscribe to, what we believe in, and the type of information that we take in and then take out on our bodies. So let that digest. I know it's a lot. This is a very, very important topic to me, and it's something that I'm freaking working on every single day. Today is not one of those days. I'm like on my period and not feeling 100% confident in my skin right now. And that's okay. Maybe I'll wake up tomorrow feeling better. You know, it changes by the day, but that is why I'm here, and that's why Regardless is here, because regardless of how you feel in the moment, regardless of what triggering post you may see on Instagram, TikTok, you've got yourself. You've got you. It's going to be okay. Look at yourself in the mirror. Hug yourself. You've got your back, and you are the only version of you. There's no one else who's even close to living your experience, feeling what it feels like to put on a pair of jeans. That is yours. And I'm here to support you in loving yourself. So let's bring in Sandy. Just a quick PSA that Sandy, she is not a licensed therapist or medical doctor. So the podcast information that you're going to hear in this episode doesn't exclude the potential of seeing a doctor or therapist. However, an energy healer is an amazing, amazing person to see, in addition to seeing a therapist or getting medical support. In today's episode, we are getting ready for an inspiring conversation with my dear friend and energy healer, Sandy Robertson. Sandy is not an ordinary nurse. She's a seasoned registered nurse with over 25 years of experience in holistic nursing, mind-body medicine, and integrative health. Sandy is also a published author with works like Why Am I Eating This? Is This the Nourishment I Need? To her newest book, 7 Simple Steps to Retrain Your Mind About Food. Through her practice and energy works wisdom, she uses cutting-edge techniques like medical intuition to healing touch and mind-body-spirit energetic self-care to really restore balance and ignite healing, which I had the pleasure of experiencing with her. Sandy is a true expert in advocating and coaching people around self-care and coaching around what that means or looks like for each unique person based on their life journey. Today, Sandy is bringing us Pristine Self-Care Nourishment Workshop. Regardless of the type of relationship we might have had or do have around food, exercise, wellness, I really hope that today's episode serves as a tool to support you and myself in rewriting our own personal self-care nourishment kit and what that means for us. So Sandy, welcome finally.
Thank you, Skylar. I'm so happy and honored to be here with you. And you just described everything I do so perfectly. So thank you for that beautiful opening and doorway into everything we're going to be talking about.
I hopefully it was encompassing everything that you do and what you stand for and truly what you represent, Sandy. I adore you and I'm so grateful to the Bay Club. Like literally they should sponsor this episode because just our special friendship and mentorship has been extremely healing for me. And I'm just really excited to bring some of your wisdom that you've shared with me along my journey to Regardless. And before we get started into really this workshop of pristine self-care, do you mind giving us like a quick summary of your profession in your terms and really what inspired you to write the second edition of Why Am I Eating This? Simple Steps to Retrain Your Mind About Food. Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to do that. Thank you, Skylar. You summed it up well that I'm a nurse, and the earlier part of my career was in corporate wellness and fitness in New York City and major corporations, and talking about nutrition and exercise, of course. And then a lot was coming into the field then about mental and nervous conditions, the mind-body-spirit connection, and that really called to me. So I went to Harvard and took week-long training in mind-body medicine with Dr. Herbert Benson, who coined the term the relaxation response, which is all about breathing techniques, and learned about guided imagery and progressive muscle relaxation, and in essence, the power of quieting the mind and body. So that was the kernel that sparked me to get onto this path, a path that really already existed in many ways, but I had not been trained in that. My basic nursing training and my master's is in community health, where I also focused on corporate wellness. So I specialized in holistic nursing, integrative health and healing, bringing these programs to corporations and hospitals, led a obesity program. Wow. And at one corporation, did a lot of nutrition counseling. But along the way with all of the holistic and integrative trainings, it became clear with especially the research in psychoneuroimmunology and the power of our thoughts and feelings and behaviors on our health. I brought that all together to want to offer that to people and also to doctors, nurses, people at hospitals, and in the community, how the power of the mind, mind body tools and techniques, and practicing self-care and looking at ourselves holistically all the time, how powerful that is. So that's really what I want to bring to people now. And why am I eating this is about helping people retrain their mind about food, thinking of food as fuel, mindful eating, of course. But the second edition was powered by all the stories I've heard since I wrote the original book about 10 years ago, and all the information on the gut-brain connection, and power of gratitude and self-compassion, and really being honest in how we're labeling food. Is it entertainment or nourishment? And for each person to look at their unique relationship with food and eating. And if they think they're seeking food, do they really need fuel, or do they need self-care and pristine nourishment, as you were talking about earlier? So that's why I wanted to offer the second edition.
It's beautiful. I love how you took the stories and feedback that you were gathering from your audience. That's something that I think all entrepreneurs and also just on an individual level, we should take in terms of just figuring out our next steps. So love that.
Thank you.
I think the term self-care, it's a very vast and vague term, and especially on social media, there's tons of influencers and celebrities to people vocalizing their self-care routine, and that can become really noisy, especially living in Los Angeles and being in the creator economy. And as a 20-something-year-old, there's lots of noise and distraction out there, and a lot of people wanting to insert their opinion or experience, which is great. I mean, knowledge is power, but how can we start to create our own definition of self-care and kind of our own nourishment kit? And I think a great way to start this conversation, Sandy, is to understand the definition of like pristine self-care. Like, what is that?
Thank you, Skylar. That is a great question, and you and I have actually discussed it many times in relation to our lives and other people we know. There are many ways to look at and consider mind, body, spirits, our energy systems, and our unique needs. So, as you said, there's a ton in the media about mindfulness and different courses that people can take on mind-body techniques. There's a ton of that. Of course, there's a lot on body and what's the best thing to do for anyone's body. Spiritual offerings, there are tons of those. I, in some ways, now specialize in the energy system because I've learned so much as a nurse and now as an energy healer that we are an energetic system. We are an energetic system. And our energy systems are precious and delicate. They can withstand a lot, but they also get bombarded by the environment, by traffic, by pollution, by maybe the offices we're working in or the homes we're living in, just normal everyday chemicals. So for each person, it's taking all of this, their mind, body, and spirit and energetic system. And considering what is the best thing for me at this moment. So it might be different for your friend. It might be different for someone in a class you take. It might be different for a family member. And I think that's the hardest part, probably especially in living in a big city, whether it's Los Angeles or other big cities, or really anywhere now with social media and comparing ourselves to others. And while that person's doing this fitness routine 7 days a week, I should be too. Or this person can exist on 4 hours of sleep, I should be able to. Or this person's doing intermittent fasting. That sounds good. But it comes back to for each person, what is it that you need in this moment? And perhaps based on your history, your unique history, your physical history, childhood issues, perhaps family dynamics and situations in the home, perhaps some trauma that would be best discussed with a mental health expert. I love now that mental health is being explored and discussed so openly and honestly. We all have mental health needs. And so back to tuning in, every day, what's the best next steps for me today? If someone works, great. Still, how much sleep should I get today? Or what is my body craving?
I
Those are some
love this.
examples.
I love this. It's so funny. Even Sandy yesterday, and it's so cool because whenever I find like my trauma or past habits that are no longer serving me, especially in the eating realm, sometimes I'm triggered. I mean, a lot of the time I'm triggered, which is why you're here today. But I was at Soho House yesterday, and just hearing, especially women, the way that they talk about food. Like someone was ordering a meal and she was like, "Well, I'm intermittent fasting now." And of course, there's a voice in my head that I'm like, "Ooh, maybe I should start intermittent fasting. Maybe I'll see results faster." And it's like, "Sky." And it's this constant voice that's like, "Maybe I should do that," because they're doing that, whether it's scrolling through Instagram or whether it's being out in public. Like you said, especially in high growth cities where body image tends to be the main focus and diet and quote unquote wellness. So it is really hard to turn off the consumption button of hearing other people's routines or eating habits and instead really look inward and ask yourself what you're needing. And that is going to be different, of course, from someone else because of your unique genetic makeup and your history with food, with exercise, with your family.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Everyone is different. Everyone is unique. And what I've learned, Skylar, after listening to thousands of stories and counseling thousands of people in corporate and hospital settings, is when people love themselves enough to care about changing their habits and/or fine-tuning them, it could be that their habits are good, just need some gentle fine-tuning. So I want your audience to realize I'm not talking about radical changes or sudden shifts. It's more this over time tuning in to what do I need and do I care about enough about myself to say no to X? Do I care about myself enough and love myself enough to choose wisely the food I'm putting into my body that might look different than what you're eating or someone else at the table at an event. And it's all okay. And also giving ourselves permission, like the chapter in my book mentioned, is it fun? Is it entertain? I'm eating this because I want to be entertained or fun. That's okay.
I love that.
Or do I just really, I know I need some nourishment right now. And it's all okay, and being able to have some curiosity and fun with it too. We really need to give ourselves permission to laugh too.
I really love that aspect that you brought in terms of labeling. Sandy, as you know, the reason why I just felt so connected to you the moment that I met you is because you, not that you guys are wickedly similar, but your energy is both extremely nurturing and welcoming and supportive that I just felt like my younger self was once again being like taken care of by you. Just the way that you embraced me, similar to my relationship that I had in Santa Barbara throughout college with my one of my mentors there. And she was really supporting me throughout my eating disorder. And that was one of the most challenging parts of my life. And it's so funny because it wasn't necessarily about, just the physical. An eating disorder is all mental. And for me, it was this sense of me not being able to feel like I was in control of my life. And so food was the only thing that I can control. I could control. And so
Yes.
let's say like I was facing a challenge, or I was said no to, or I was rejected by a guy, or I didn't perform well on a test. or I wasn't feeling good enough or pretty enough or thin enough, I would restrict. So it wasn't like I was choosing overly healthy foods, but I was also not allowing myself to enjoy or be nourished. And I was killing myself. And I remember when I was going abroad, I almost wasn't allowed to go because I was not healthy. And my parents were very, very concerned about my mental and physical health, especially being in a different country.
Of course.
And I remember I was like, Sky, you are going to Europe and you are going to enjoy the food. And this is my first experience with labeling, where I realized that if I wasn't going to partake in eating food, because I've always been a foodie, then I
Yeah.
wasn't going to fully experience the full color of spectrum, travel, pleasure, play in Europe. And that was my first experience with labeling. And that was extremely powerful and excuse me, that I still implement into my weekends, into my weeks. So
Beautiful.
I love that.
Beautiful. That's a great example, Skylar. That's a great example.
Yeah, that was pretty powerful in my journey. And so I love that you're bringing that to your clients.
And that it's okay to label food fun, beautiful, enjoyable, fancy food, gourmet food, whatever. And it's about the amount. And especially European cultures, when I've been there, I've noticed people eat beautiful and sometimes rich food, and they eat small amounts, and it's just enough to nourish themselves and enjoy it. So that's a powerful lesson that I've observed too, watching people and hearing people's stories, like I'm sure you observed on your trip. It's okay to partake in it and to eat just enough.
Yeah, and there's also sometimes like this misconception around or a not knowing around when to stop eating, and that's probably something that you discuss in your book. I mean, it's seven si simple steps to retrain your mind about food. And so it's like, how can I tune in to my process of eating? Am I still eating because it like tastes good? Because I do that a lot.
Right,
Or and like, am
right.
I still hungry? Am I stressed? Am I not paying attention? Like, am I distracted? That's another aspect of it as well.
Definitely. And there's a general guideline I learned along the way to have your meal last at least 20 minutes, for example, because it takes 20 minutes for the message to get from the stomach to the brain that you've had enough,
Ooh.
and that signal to stop eating. And so many of us along the way, for whatever reason, whether it's the foods put on our plate or the people we're with are still eating, oh well, I'll just keep eating, and oh well, and not paying attention. So a lot of my book within each of the steps actually is about paying attention. What's the right amount of food for me? And when is the time for me to stop because I've had enough nourishment and I can take it to go or, put it away and enjoy it tomorrow? How much is enough nourishment for me, regardless of what the people around me may be doing, eating? And maybe they're finished in 5 minutes and I want to keep eating mindfully, slowly, chewing my food, enjoying it, and then still stopping when I know, okay, that's enough. Trusting that signal that we're getting, or we're learning to tune into that signal. I've had it, my body's had enough fuel for now.
Yeah, I love the word tuning in, and I have a good friend. She's really, really talented, and it's taken a lot of work for her, and I'm so proud of her. But before she eats a meal, she takes like a couple of minutes to meditate and breathe before she takes her own bite, regardless of how hungry she is.
I love that.
Which is
I
really
love that.
beautiful. Yeah. And she's really great at being disciplined in holding herself accountable and partaking in that, even when she is with friends who want to just dive in, like myself.
That's a good
I'm working on it.
example.
Yeah.
That's a good example, Skylar, of adding rituals, anyone's personal rituals, to a meal through the centuries. Grace or some kind of prayer before a meal was very, very common. And it's interesting you cite that example from your friend. I love that because it is a way of slowing down and pausing and focusing on gratitude for the day, for our life, for our health, whatever, gratitude for this food. And then going into the steps of nourishing ourselves. And just that pause, I think, for many of us can help. Okay, I'm grateful. I appreciate this. I pause, and now I'm going to start with my first bite, instead of diving in and inhaling it in 5 minutes, which can happen, of course.
Yes. Sandy, this is a great question. And as you know, there's tons of diet books out there. I mean, even
Tons.
advertisements. I'm on YouTube and there's like lose weight fast. This is a metabolism killer. You name it, all over the map. And how is your book different than a diet book?
Great question, Skylar. My book is not a diet book because I don't believe in diets.
Tell me why.
And
I don't either.
for most people, when they think of a diet, they think of something that's temporary. I'm going on a 7-day diet or a 2-week diet, or even unless they have a health reason for it, I'm going to start eliminating this from my diet. And maybe there's a medical reason, maybe not. I wrote this book to help people change their relationship with food and to change their relationship with themselves around food and to be willing to look back. One of the chapters, Uncover the Mystery of Your Eating History, about some of the habits you may have learned when you were young and/or influences that caused you perhaps to overeat or undereat or both, and to start reframing. Okay, I appreciate that's who I was. I appreciate those habits. And now I love and care about myself enough to reframe how I look at food. I look at food as nourishment, and I look at food as fuel. And sometimes I look at food as fun or entertainment. And at the same time, if there are traumas or deep issues around food, or why there's food issues, of course, explore those with a mental health professional, definitely. But I love guiding people to how they can retrain their mind and change their relationship with food and their mind, body, spirit, energetic system.
It's all intertwined.
It is, it really is.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I mean, I remember I have, a diverse group of friends, and just depending on background, where they come from, how they're raised. I have some friends who, if they don't finish their entire plate, they get really fearful because they grew up in a household where they had to finish everything on their plate.
Yes.
And so I think that would be something similar to trauma triggers or something, an old narrative that is no longer serving them. So would you say, when thinking about how you were raised around food or growing up observing your parents' relationship with food and exercise, is it about pointing out what that narrative was and then figuring out like the type of relationship you want to build and then journaling and taking those steps? Like, what is the game plan to this look like?
That's a great question, Skylar. For each person, I'll use myself as an example. My mother tended toward being overweight, and my grandmother, her mother, lived with us. From German Germanic background influences, and the food at that time was rich and heavy and large portions. But for both of them, who loved to cook, that was their way of showing love. And probably that's what they learned. My father, on the other hand, was an athlete into his 90s, was actually an alternate for the Olympics in track and field. And he was a very disciplined eater. and would eat just enough and leave food on his plate and say, "No, thank you. I don't want dessert." It was very interesting, the dynamics. There was also a lot of emotion and discontent in our house. And so food was used as a way to numb feelings. And I was overweight as a child. So I can identify and appreciate people who have shame and embarrassment and frustration around the habits they learned when they were young and perhaps were either overweight or underweight for different reasons. And now I look at it that it's an opportunity, regardless of someone's history, personal home, etc., it's never too late to look at food and fuel and reframe and create new personalized, not just eating plans, but nourishment plans, taking all of that, that history, background, and who the person is today in real time into consideration.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing your personal experience with
Yes.
eating. Emotions also have a big impact into our eating habits.
Definitely.
Oh my
Definitely.
goodness. So,
Definitely.
yeah. Whether it's overeating, whether it's undereating, restricting, eating, and then exercising, making yourself throw up. In what ways do you think, from your experience, Sandy, do you think emotions affect our eating habits?
I want to say 100%. I don't know the statistic offhand, but unless someone has grown up with excellent tools to self-soothe, so think of children, or babies crying or young children, and you can see in the grocery store anywhere, children crying, perhaps they're given a snack or a lollipop or at the bank or just eat more, you're upset. Versus, I've observed this, parents, mother and father comforting the child. It's okay. Hugging them, comforting them, take a breath, perhaps distracting them, laughing. It's okay. And again, I know even mindfulness and mindful breathing is being taught now in schools. So I'll just say I didn't learn tools to self-soothe as a child. So I think more and more now that it's so out there in the media, I think it is, and again, being taught in schools, but for those of us and other people who did not learn tools to self-soothe, other than food, food was the main go-to item. So that's a big reason too, Skylar, that I talk about self-compassion. Self-compassion is honoring ourselves and our journeys, no matter what that has looked like, as we honor our friends' journeys, it's easy to be compassionate about a friend. And then looking at it neutrally and saying, it's okay. That was then, this is now, I can go forward. Again, I can get the expert medical and/or mental health guidance I need, or work with a guide or coach like me to start tuning in a neutral, safe environment. Just with curiosity. I don't know if that answers totally your question, but I think a lot of it's about self-compassion and where we are now.
No, I love that. Have you heard of the book Fear Self-Compassion?
I've not.
Okay, I'm gonna have to send it to you and I'll put it within this link.
Thank
That's
you.
such a helpful book. It's actually on my next to my bed because I have to remind myself of that frequently.
Yes,
And it's
yes.
also just having self-compassion for also what you've gone through and having or giving yourself a perspective check on the growth, even the baby steps.
Absolutely,
Because
absolutely.
when we get into self-comparison or we hop on Instagram and we're scrolling and we see the way someone looks, our dream body, or we see the recipes that they're making or how much they eat in a day, it's not the full picture. It is
It's not.
not the full picture, and it would be so mean to yourself to compare because your story is your story, and the way food processes in your body and what food will actually nourish you is going to be completely different to your best friend.
Completely. Completely. Our
Yeah.
metabolism is unique, every person. And I think that's the big disservice I see with social media and comparisons, because we can't compare our unique metabolism and energy system to someone else, even who's the same age or lives the same lifestyle as we do.
That's huge. And also stress plays a big role into this as well.
Absolutely. And what triggers us, and a lot of the mind-body tools that I teach, and I know that a lot of people know, whether it's breathing or meditation, they can help with issues around food by having us pause for a moment. So no matter what the emotion is, there's something I put in my book, you may have heard of this, called HALT. Am I
Yes.
hungry, angry, lonely, or tired?
Ooh, this is good.
And
Can you
so
let's dig into it?
it's HALT. And a
Oh.
psychologist I worked with in an obesity program taught that. So, in any given moment, say you're working on a project at home or working, and you're like, I really want to go to the refrigerator or the cabinet and get something right now. And just pause for a moment. Am I really hungry, physically hungry? Or am I angry, lonely, or tired? Or I add, or dehydrated, or perhaps frustrated. I know people who work from home. I know myself, other people, sometimes they're tech issues,
Yep.
trying to connect to something and tech issues. And so frustration can be a trigger for someone. And just that, when you were asking about what prompts people to take these steps, favorable or unfavorable, we can get triggered. But just the tool, one simple tool of pause. You can even laugh, of just pause and maybe just, put your hands over your heart and take a breath and, okay, right this minute, what am I feeling? Am I hungry, angry, lonely, tired, frustrated, depressed, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, take a breath. What would help right now? Do I really need food, or could I go outside for 2 minutes and look at the sky and look at a flower and breathe and just refresh? Change in an environment sometimes really helps, just a reset, a refresh.
That's a really great tool. I think also boredom is in that as well. Like, am I
Absolutely.
bored?
Yes.
And
Yes.
yeah, or like
Yes.
bored of environment or temperature, even. That's
Yes.
really helpful. I love this idea of triggers. And I'm also looking in your book right now, and I want to bring this to self-talk.
Yes.
Because this really caught my eye. Sandy, what role does self-talk play in the relationship between food choices or eating behavior and knowledge?
Self-talk, Skylar, can help and support us,
Okay.
or it can sabotage us. We're talking to ourselves all the time, thousands of messages a day. And put really simply, since we're already talking to ourselves anyway, when we're around food or making food choices, whether it's in our kitchen, in a restaurant, at an event with friends, what are we saying to ourselves? Literally, what's the process? You're looking at a menu. Is someone thinking, is what do I feel like eating right now? That's fine. Maybe I just feel like eating whatever. Or perhaps what is my body craving? Or how much is enough? That's self-talk. Think of going through, especially with so many events, you can eat whatever you want, as much as you want. How much do I really need right now? And then many people, the obesity, I've seen statistics that 50% of people are overweight, up to 75% of Americans are overweight. Well, Again, I've counseled thousands of people, and a lot of people who are overeating for reasons that have nothing to do with how much food they need, they're not listening to that self-talk, or they have self-talk such as, I deserve this. I'm going through something. I'm whatever, fill in the blank. I deserve this. I need this. I deserve this. So I don't judge about what it is. I just offer that as a tool. People are diving into their own, unique nourishment needs. How do I talk to myself around food? And is it helpful or punishing? And how might it be a little more helpful?
I like the word helpful.
Yes.
Like, what food item would be most helpful for me right now from a holistic lens? Not because it's helping me cope through one emotion, because that's not necessarily healthy unless, like, it's your birthday or you actually do deserve it. Because I do tell
Right.
myself that,
Yes.
because that is healing for me due to my history with eating, and that's going to be different for everyone.
Right.
But I love just being really mindful about how you talk to yourself. And when you're looking at a menu, like, try not like to judge the items. Like, I don't
Right.
know. I go out to dinner with some of my girlfriends, and there's just complete judgment on like fries. You're like, oh my God. Like, okay, like you don't have to have it, but like that may alter someone else's experience, and we're all on different timeline. Like, it's all as well.
And it's not all or nothing, Skylar. This point is so important in this body aware, body shaming culture. So many people I see and hear about, look at food, it's all or nothing. And so you're going out to dinner and you want to have some French fries. Great. Enjoy. Do you need to eat all of them on the plate? Maybe not. Can you share them, with your friends at the table? Probably. Can you take some home? Yes, they taste great the next day. So that's what I'm saying, that in a way it's playing with what's permissible in a new way based on what feels good in this moment. And then another, back to self-talk. One question I started coaching people and guiding them to say, and I do for myself, is how will I feel if I eat this? Not in a punishing way, again, more neutral. How will I feel? Like, it looks good on the menu, or perhaps a dessert. How about sharing it, with friends or the table and having two bites? Wonderful. You got the essence of it. You tasted it. Wonderful. So just asking in a non-judgmental way with compassion, how will I feel when I eat this? Someone might say, crummy, but I still want to eat it. Okay, but at least you asked the question.
And I love how all of this, I know we've been talking mostly about eating, but all of this really goes into an overarching theme of pristine self-care. And I know especially our work together was not a lot about eating at all, actually, which is amazing because that means that I'm growing in that area. And it was more in regards to rest and listening to my body and not pushing myself to feel like I have to be on routine every day. And that's what I think is related to the all or nothing thinking, because I really am an unfortunate statistic in the all or nothing thinking, because that's kind of how I look at in terms of working out. You know me, like I love the gym, and I have just this idea in my head where, like, if I'm not on routine, or if I don't go every day, or if I don't get in at least an hour of working out, like, it doesn't count. And in that routine, there's no space for checking in or tuning in with myself. And that's what I've really realized working with you.
I appreciate that you're saying that, Skylar. It is a new tool for all of us to tune in to not just what we're eating or how much we're exercising, but to our unique, precious energy systems. And as an energy healer when I'm working with people and just noticing things in the energy system and then asking just some gentle questions about lifestyle and habit and sleep and diet. It's a way for people to think more deeply and about what's best for them, like the experience that you shared. What's best for you? What's best for someone in any given day? And it's not all or nothing. And back to, can I love myself enough to say it's okay if I miss a day of exercise or changing my routine? Because I know that what I really need is to rest and slow down for today.
Or what I really need is to get outside and walk.
Yes, be in nature. Look at the
And these
sky.
things are, it's so funny because like these seem like such obvious things, but I know that everyone listening to this, they don't. They're not reminding themselves of this every day and making these decisions. It's a lot easier said than done. And I mean, you would love this, Sandy. One of my friends from the gym who we would work out together, she left and she started her own club called the 10K Steps Club. And she's been walking outside, getting fresh air every day, getting in her 10K steps, and she's lost weight and her anxiety has decreased. I think she's just overall more happy. And it was really interesting because I caught myself. I'm very susceptible to if I hear something's working for someone, I'm always like, oh my God, should I do this? I need to start doing this. And I caught myself doing that. And I realized, Sky, like you love your community classes. You love the gym. There's family there. I still love that. Doesn't mean I can't decide not to go to the gym one day and walk 10K steps instead. So I think it's just like figuring out the eating blueprint, the working out blueprint, the wellness, the rest blueprint for you and you alone.
You said it perfectly. You said it perfectly, Skylar.
Yeah. And I think this was like such a good introduction into this topic because obviously there's so much to cover. But I would love, Sandy, getting into the conclusion of what it looks like for someone to start creating their own nourishment kit, whether that is surrounding eating or rest or mindfulness. Overall nourishment encompasses all of those things. Throughout your book and in your practice, how do you guide your followers to really create their own blueprint? Like, what are the steps that we can start to create in our daily lives to create a kit for ourselves? And this can kind of go into our syllabus steps, of actual resources that my audience can take with them.
When I work with clients, Skylar, I ask some simple basic questions about lifestyle and how they're feeling physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and their basic lifestyle habits, if there are any issues going on right now. And then, depending on what kind of session they're there for, energy healing, medical intuition, I work and tune into their energy systems and help to balance that. And then after that, work one-on-one. It's a co-creation. So it's not me doing it for someone. The client is the expert. The client is the expert on their life. And I love to remind people that you're the expert. You have the information and the wisdom. It's we keep talking about tuning in, but it really is about tuning in and then fine-tuning. And really simply being aware of the components. What am I doing for myself mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, energetically, with nature, with friends, with support system, and creating a guide around that. So people get my book. I suggest getting my book because it has a lot about whole health and circle of health and these tools, and people could actually start on their own, creating a personalized guide. And then, of course, I would love to work with some of your followers who are ready for something in a little more detail. and tuning in deeper ways to what they're ready for, to
I
nourish
love
themselves.
it. Yeah, I mean, I think like just to get into the nitty-gritty, if we're able to offer a couple of what those tools are, like I don't know when, like I'm trying to think of some of the tools that we went through, but I mean, I remember we did like a medical and intuitive read together, and we went through some of like the food groups that either were working or were not working for me, and then I could kind of test and see what felt good in my body. But in terms of like when I'm creating a blueprint, let's say I went to journal tonight, like are there
Yes.
any prompts that I could leverage or input into my journaling to help me figure out like, okay, how, like, where do I start in this eating blueprint? Like, if you could give us one example.
I would have people as a very first step,
Yeah.
keep a daily food journal
Okay, there we go. Okay, cool.
and not from a place of this is punishment or this is a chore. It could be, everyone does it in their phone or a little notebook. It just basically, not just what am I eating, but what am I feeling? What time of day is it? And how am I feeling emotionally and physically? So that is a great way to start. Some people have food sensitivities or digestive issues, and they're really not sure why. Because for all of us, it's hard to remember, what did I eat yesterday? What did I eat 3 days ago? So a food journal, but really I call it a daily self-care guide to track the food that I'm eating, the amount of exercise, not from blame, but more when do I feel the best? Say if someone notices, when I walk for 45 minutes versus 30, I notice I have more energy. Or if I walk twice a day for 30 minutes each time, that really helps me at the end of the day restart. So, exercise tracking. Then sleep is really important. I have all my clients track how are you sleeping? What's the quality of your sleep? I know a lot of the apps track that and watches, but do I need to go to bed earlier? Regardless of what my friends are doing. And then emotionally and spiritually, how am I feeling? For whatever reason. And usually when we're tracking it, we can understand, oh, it's because of this. I had a rough day because of this. Or spiritually, depending on how someone looks at themselves in the universe, that could be a gentle reminder that they need more community with like-minded spiritual people or to reconnect online in some way. So that's a very, those are some very simple tools, Skylar, for people, whatever you call it, your daily nourishment guide,
Yeah,
your
I love
daily
that.
self-care nourishment guide, tuning into what you're eating, not just how much you're exercising, but where, maybe who was there. Maybe you notice, when I'm with my friends, I have a much better time and exercise is simpler. How am I sleeping? How am I feeling emotionally and spiritually? And take a snapshot, say a week. And then at that point, assess, okay, what do I feel I might need to, as a boost, to fine-tune this, perhaps to work with an expert and to go deeper with offering yourself all the nourishment and compassion and love that you so richly deserve, that everyone richly deserves. And it's the combination that I think is the main message I'd like people to understand. It's the combination of how we care for ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, energetically, that, and with friends and family, that creates the quality and the fabric of our lives and our health
Beautiful.
and our wellness.
Oh, thank you, Sandy. I also, this is something that I'm curious about. Our sessions together, our energy healing sessions, were so, like, the word is healing, really. I know that is what the name of the session is, but it really is a healing experience. And of course, I encourage all of my listeners. Actually, before I encourage you to go, there are a couple of ducks need to be in the same row. And it's that you have to be ready to go on that spiritual journey. and you have to be ready to put in the work. And it's not like you just go to a session and then you're healed and ta-da, you don't have to do anything. It's this constant practice of a continuous inner work, self-growth, to really accessing your future self. And that's what regardless is. Like, regardless of the noise, regardless of what your friends are doing, what external pressures or just shit you're going through, you have your back and you can access parts of your highest self through energy healing. But alongside the energy healing, you have to be doing the inner work. And I remember that's something that you said that I loved. One of the compliments you gave me is that, Skylar, I just love that you were so open and committed to this spiritual journey. And I think that's when people will get the most out of it, is being committed to your highest self.
You said it. It's a readiness and an openness. And generally, people who come for energy healing have been on this path for a while and or, you know, looking at things from a medical intuitive point of view. And I consider it a collaborative relationship and partnership. And I'm just gently showing people, giving them a look, another viewpoint of what's going on in their bodies. And as you said, bodies, minds, spirits, energy system. Then it's up to them to take that information. Everyone has free will, and to go forward. And it's a beautiful opportunity for people who are ready to look at their overall health, well-being on all levels from a new perspective.
And even something that's hitting really close to home for me right now is chronic health issues. And yes, diet could be involved. There may actually be a health issue. But
yes, yes. But
also, like, emotional attachment to maybe past trauma or something that is blocking you from healing. Like, I, Sandy, working with you, I'm still experiencing chronic UTIs. There's some sort of story or energy in that area that I need to clear. And it's just this process of, like, me putting the energy and the time and the self-care and nourishment in that area and in that story, which has not been easy, but it's something that I'm committed to and looking for solutions. But it is tiring and it is exhausting. It can be so frustrating at the same time.
I appreciate your sharing that, Skylar. And while I, of course, won't go into detail about your situation, I, as a nurse, I vary about referring people to doctors and expert healthcare professionals who can diagnose things and get things right. And sometimes people come to me for taking another look from a different perspective, the energy system perspective. And I work and volunteer in an integrative health center where acupuncture is done. And that's readily available. But messages are in our bodies and in our energy systems. So I believe people can get excellent information from doctors and the medicines they need. And sometimes, this is my training now and my work, I believe there are other messages in the energy system that cannot contradict what's been given and the information, but can to help foster healing in that area that may be connected, as you said, to emotional situations or other situations in life. Back to our thoughts and feelings and emotions register in the body and the energy system. So to me, it makes sense that someone's getting support on all levels. Yes, the medical system, but the energy systems, like why people go to acupuncturists or other types of healing.
It's so true. I mean, look, when we're stressed out, we can start to feel ill. I recently was so stressed that I was throwing up like 3 nights in a row, not sleeping. And that wasn't because I was actually sick. It was because of my emotions. That's how powerful our mind is. So it makes sense that messaging and held experiences of fear or pain is stored in different areas of our body. So it's for sure a
Yes.
holistic view of medicine, therapy, life coaching, energy healing. And it is, looking at the whole lens of it that to me, I see like money signs. But if you're able, especially in our 20s, to like take the micro steps, the baby steps to figuring each puzzle piece out at a time, that is something. And that is priceless to your future and your current self.
Yes, and so many self-care tools can be taught.
Yeah.
So one thing I love to do, as Skylar, is share self-healing, whether it's breathing techniques or guided imagery or using aromatherapy or doing some easy energy clearing and self-nourishment with energy. I like to give the tools to people to have that. I don't think that people should have to go for some kind of treatment, whatever it is, every week. I mean, it's nice to people have the access to whatever it is, a sauna, a spa, whirlpool, or massage. But for many people, especially in your age group, it's a treat and a luxury. So I like to impart tools that people can use for themselves for self-care and self-nourishment and share it with your friends so that the ripples go out.
Sandy, I have one final question for you. And this is a personal question. So really your story with nourishment, with mindfulness, with eating. And it's a fill in the blank. So regardless of blank, I am.
Regardless of some of the challenges in my life and my life journey, I'm filled with gratitude that now I get to bring all of my training and expertise and passion for helping people heal together to offer tools for self-nourishment and helping people not just change the relationship with food, but knowing that underneath it's all about self-love. That's what I am thrilled to share with your audience and the world.
That is why I started this podcast, is because I love to be loved and I love to love. And there's a lot of just shit out there. Not only mean, fearful messages, experiences, but also not enough like love and access to love or support and resources to get there, to get to where you want to be.
It's so beautiful, Skylar, your mission. And I really want to not just congratulate you, but celebrate you that you work so hard to have this vehicle to share messages of health and well-being. But underneath it, in every one of your podcasts, it's all about self-love. And I believe that's the most important message for every human being as a starting point to then go forward and do whatever someone wants to do in the world. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for your mission, which I
Sandy.
celebrate and I'm thrilled to be on this journey with you.
Sandy, thank you for saying that. And it's self-love, but also self-compassion, because we cannot control what happens in our external world, but we can control what happens in here and how we respond and how we react and how that really impacts the way that we look at the world in our next step. But I think, again, it stems at the self-love and compassion, fear self-compassion.
And I haven't read that book that you mentioned, but
It's so
mindful
good.
self-compassion, the whole field, which that probably talks about of mindful self-compassion. I've taken some courses. There's so many fabulous online resources for self-compassion and mindful self-compassion, and it makes everything okay. And then people can reset and go find the experts they want to work with. But you're exactly right. Self-love and self-compassion.
Sandy, you are incredible. I am forever grateful to the Bay Club. And just my sessions with you have been so transformational in the way that I look at nourishment and my own definition of self-care, pristine self-care. And I highly encourage everyone to reach out to Sandy and book a session with her. She's incredible, so talented. And again, this work is truly transformational and such a powerful resource to add in addition to therapy. Or if you're not ready for therapy, this could be a great step in that direction. Her latest book is Why Am I Eating This? 7 Simple Steps to Retrain Your Mind About Food. It will be available for purchase on Amazon. Any other important links that we should share with my cute little audience?
The subtitle, Is This the Nourishment I Need? Of the second edition is something I'm really excited about, that combo package. So of really thinking of food as nourishment. So thank you so much, Skylar. Deep gratitude.
And Sandy, I'm going to be adding in your contact information, your website, the link to purchase the book through the show notes. And I'm just so excited to share this with everyone.
Thank you so much, Skylar. I love you.
I love you.
I love you. I'll see you soon.
Okay. I'll see
Thank
you
you.
later. Love
Thank
you.
you for this opportunity. Bye-bye.
Always. There'll be many more. 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 More.
Thanks for listening to Regardless. I hope you've learned something from this month's Soul Conversation and will apply it to your very own syllabus. Join me next month for a new guest, a new tool, and a new perspective. If you found value in this podcast, please empower your tribe by sharing, leaving a comment, review, and/or subscribe. Catch new episodes on the second and fourth week of every month on all major audio podcast platforms. For more information about my life and updates about the podcast, head to my Instagram at Skylar Sorkin and at Regardless the Pod. Thank you for tuning into Regardless. Thank you for being vulnerable and talking about the uncomfortable. Now go kick some ass.